Hey, everyone. Welcome back to High Tea Hoops. This is Brian Beauchet at the Duke of Hoops. And as always, we have Skylar the Duchess. What's up, Skylar?
Hi, Brian.
And we have a very special guest today, Hugh Hopkins, lead writer at Double Clutch UK and analyst at Sky Sports. Hugh, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm the lucky one, guys. Thank you for having me. Such royalty, a duke and a duchess. I don't know what I did to deserve to be on this show.
And as we've proven, duchesses can be American. It's a real big breakthrough in the world
apparently.
Now.
That's true. Thanks, Meghan Markle.
Apparently. But let's just start off. We want to get to know you a little bit better, Hugh. I'm not sure our audience knows you as well. So you just want to give a quick background on yourself and what you do?
Yeah, certainly. So I'm a basketball fan, ultimately, but I am a writer and I do some podcasting and do, occasionally pop up on a video feed, mainly with Double Clutch. So Double Clutch has been where I sort of started my basketball writing journalism career. In the past 2 years, I've been working with Sky Sports, doing their WNBA and NBA content, just as a sort of analyst a couple of times a week. But yeah, that's been super fun.
Yeah, and if you don't follow Hugh, it's Coach Hugh on Twitter, right? At Coach Hugh?
On Instagram as well, yeah. At Coach _ Hugh, H-U-W, the Welsh spelling of the name rather than the English.
Got it. Yeah. Incredible interviews. Go follow Hugh. Incredible stories. But before we hop into the incredible lineup of games we had last night, which 4 in a row, amazing. Hugh, we just want to start off with some of your favorite moments in the bubble and wobble so far. So if you want to start off, what has been your favorite? Let's start with the NBA. What has been your favorite moment? Maybe okay. You can go to 2 or 3. Favorite moment of the bubble so far?
I think it's difficult because I'm a Spurs fan by heart, but I think coolest thing absolutely in the NBA bubble is that the Phoenix Suns went 8-0. Like, it feels like a lifetime ago now, but that was a totally cool moment, right? Like, no other team did it, but then you know they did so well and yet they didn't even make the playoffs. Like, that's just sports in a nutshell, really, isn't it? You can have the highest of highs, but you can be just knocked down so quickly and so easily.
Mm-hmm. That literally feels like it was so long ago. I forgot that the Suns were even in the bubble at any point. Hugh, who's been your favorite player to watch in the bubble?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think I've really enjoyed what Chris Paul was doing, because he basically was, you know, it felt like he was like facing off against the world, you know, because he dragged this ragtag bunch of little OKC mini Chris Pauls to the to the bubble and to the playoffs, and then. You know, he went up against his old foe, and I'm not a huge Chris Paul fan, to be honest, but like, it just, that was a really cool story. But then also, you know, well, I'm sure we're going to get into it, but I have been loving Denver. I'm such a huge fan of all Europeans that are in the league, but I've had the opportunity to sort of follow Serbian national teams a little bit, which we don't necessarily have to go into right now, but I'm such a huge fan of Nikola Jokic because of everything that he's done for the national teams and for Denver. I've been enjoying that. And of course, you know, you can't not love what Luka was doing at various stages. I think it's been a huge success ultimately. You know, I think if they want to do the bubble each year, I wouldn't be against it. I don't get to go to the games anyway because I'm over here. So, you know, yeah. if they want to do the bubble again next year, it's been super exciting.
Yeah, great call on Jokic. I'm going to do my best to not make this a Nuggets podcast. And good to have another Nuggets ally, because Skylar does not enjoy watching the Nuggets. They don't have enough charisma.
I think they're boring, honestly.
What?
I don't know. I'm sorry. I just don't like watching them. There's something aesthetically about how they play that I just really don't like. And also, I just the them just falling asleep through the first half every single time. It's just, I just don't want to watch it.
It's better content anyway, Hugh. It's fine. We have to have some conflict.
Yeah.
Going over to the WNBA, which has I do love the bubbles. It's also been great for UK friendly times because they're on the East Coast of the States. So having, you know, the early games, especially early on in the play-in and the playoffs, I think has made it a lot more accessible to the UK for both the NBA and WNBA, which has been cool.
Yeah, for the first few weeks at least. I mean, I think for the NBA, I don't think we have any more early games, even on the weekends where we, you know, we tend to see a slightly earlier start time. I think we are starting, like, I think most of the games start at like 11 now, which is doable for diehards like myself and some of the other people that you've had on here from the UK. You know, those guys and myself, they will tend to stay up beyond 1 o'clock to watch live games, but there were some glorious moments where we had games starting at like 5 o'clock, then 7 o'clock, and then 9 o'clock, and it was beautiful. You know, you could just watch it while walking around the house and just getting on with your day. And I miss those days. I mean, the WNBA is still doing, you know, early times on the weekends, so that's good. I think we're reaching the important stages of the playoffs now. So it's going to get harder.
Yeah. I think the hoop genius Mo Moonsy had that Twitch stream last night at like 2 a.m. Where they were going super late with Lawrence and Yanni. But I don't think a lot of UK people are going to stay up for that. All right, let's go over to
credit to them for trying.
yeah, exactly. All right, let's go over to the Wubble. Favorite Wubble moment so far? This could be on court or off court. Fishing trips, exciting games. What's been your favorite?
Okay. I think like some of the best moments, like when the WNBA season just started and all the teams just got to the Wubble, you know, you had one of my favorite moments was the Chicago Sky. They did this video where they were all on their bikes. And it started with like a close up shot of Courtney Vandersloot, and then it panned backwards, and all of a sudden all the other players started coming in from different side roads and outside of other houses and stuff, and then you had Gabby Williams on the longboard, and it was just this such well produced video. But being the Chicago Sky, the possibly the coolest team in the WNBA. They then went away and showed all the outtakes and all the people laughing and trying to get Courtney Vandersloot's face, you know, perfectly in shot while all the others joined. And yeah, I love that team. They've got such a great social media presence. All the WNBA teams do, to be fair. But some other moments, like, I mean, it's pretty recent, but Shea Petty hitting that game-winning shot last night Oh God! How beautiful was that for her?
And I think Skylar has a whole segment on this.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And then favorite WNBA player. Who's been your favorite to watch so far?
To be fair, I got to put Courtney Vandersloot up there. She's absolutely one of the most exciting players in the league. And she just got her 9.59 assist average up to 10.0.
Yes.
So becoming the first player in WNBA history to reach 10 assists per game. That's totally cool. The first jersey I ever bought, WNBA jersey I ever bought, was Asia Wilson. So I'm a huge fan of her simply because she's just got this amazing personality that translates on and off the court. You know, she's super hyper focused and competitive. But then in between plays, she'll just like, you know, make fun of herself for shooting such a dorky right hand layup because she can't shoot with her right hand, you know. That's a really fun team. And of course, you've got to love Seattle Storm. They are just a world-class professional sports organization. You know, they really know how to do things properly, and they have done ever since they entered the WNBA. And it helps having, you know, Sue Bird on your team.
Yeah, I did not prep Hugh before this podcast, Skylar. So the Nuggets praise and the Seattle Storm praise are all on his own.
Yeah.
I did not tell him to say that.
This is a Storm podcast.
She has to tell me every time not to talk about the Storm
too much. I'm all about that.
All right. Let's go into the incredible lineup of games we had last night. Celtics Heat. Let's start there. First game of the Eastern Conference Finals. Skylar, I'm going to set this one up for you. You deserve it. Thank you. Give us your reactions, your overview, your Jimmy Bucket segment, whatever you need. The floor is yours.
I just want to get this out of the way. You can call me a hater for not liking the Nuggets, not thinking they're fun to watch. But when you watch the Heat, it just feels like such a difference. Like the Heat are just so fun to watch. And so you contrast that with the Nuggets. And it's just the Nuggets get tough to watch for me.
In your opinion.
Just want to get that out there. Just saying. Just saying. There's a lot of hype around the Nuggets. It's okay if you just want to watch the fun teams. Anyways, this series is going to be so fun. The way that these two teams were battling back and forth was one of the most fun games I've ever seen. Let's talk about the Bam block first. We just have to get it out of the way. I have not stopped watching it since last night. I've literally like once an hour pulled it up and just rewatched it. It makes no sense. Like the amount of wrist strength that Bam had to block that shot, the way that Jason Tatum had cocked that ball back and was about to slam it down. Like it boggles the mind how strong Bam had to be to block that shot. And just want to remind people that Bam was robbed of most improved player this year.
Fair. I thought we saw the best like single appendage block with Kawhi with that middle finger block.
Yep.
But I think this one was more impressive because his hand was in the bucket. Yeah. It was all the way down and full strength throwing it down with a running start.
Yep.
I could not believe that. Yep. I was shocked.
Me too. We watched this together last night, Brian.
Yeah, sure.
You can attest to the fact that I was getting so hype about clutch Jimmy buckets just coming through when they needed him. Thank God for Jimmy buckets.
What do you think, Hugh, watching this?
I mean, yeah, shout out to teenage boys everywhere. You know, they know about that, you know, that immense wrist strength. And I think Bam has to be one of the the thing that I'm most excited about is Bam is one of the best big men in the league right now. And he's one of the most, going back to what you said, Sky, he's one of the most underrated and underappreciated outside of the sort of core diehard NBA followers. The thing that's amazing about him is that he's not just a center. He is also a guy who can bring the ball up the court, you know, and he's also probably the best defender on what is a team of ridiculously talented defenders. He can pretty much do it all. He can shoot from the outside. He can post down low on the block and also face up his man. Yeah, he does need to improve in some little areas, but does anybody doubt that he won't improve as he gets older and better? I mean, he's... The improvements that he's shown already, and you know, going back to that big man thing, like he's one of that. We have four teams left, right? That's right, isn't it? Yeah, we have four teams left, and three of those four teams have elite big men. Now, that's something I think 3 or 4 years ago we were like, that's never going to happen again, you know. But it's showing that basketball doesn't have to be played one way, and it's everybody's got these different styles, and even within those different categories of big men, you've got these different styles of being played. And I just think Bam very much has put himself up in the elite category of big men in the league right now. And yeah, that block was incredible, but it's everything that he does on the court that deserves the praise, because he is such a well-rounded player. And having someone like Jimmy Butler sort of bring out the, you know, the competitive spirit in him, like, you know, you could sort of describe it as like, you know, more intense description for Jimmy Butler, because I think he takes it up to another level. But he, whatever team he goes on, he brings out that fire on any team, and I think we're seeing it in Bam Adebayo as well. So yeah, they're a great pair, and I'm looking forward to them for the next few years.
Yeah, that's what I think my biggest takeaway from this, excuse me, is the Western Conference. We saw a lot of teams almost look like they gave up on the court. The Rockets, like, just the effort wasn't there. Things were off. The Clippers, the same thing in their series. But with the Heat and the Celtics, they, every role player is stepping up. They're all competing. They're coming back. So I think this was a crazy, roller coaster of a game, because Boston outscored them 26-18 in the first quarter. Miami came back 37-29. Then Boston hit them back with 28-16. Then Miami came back in the fourth with a 35-23. So every quarter, they're like throwing haymakers back and forth. And you had, almost four of their players on the Heat score over 20. You had Tatum step up, Walker step up, Marcus Smart step up, Jaylen Brown. And it just feels like these teams are more competitive and want it more. And I think you're right. I think it's the Jimmy Butler being that leader, bringing everyone up. And then you see the kind of young leaders, young squad around Kemba Walker and Tatum stepping up for the Celtics. This series is so much fun. And I wish we had more of these on the Western Conference. Marcus Smart.
Don't leave Marcus Smart out.
I just master at drawing.
The Boston fans will hunt you down if you leave Marcus Smart out.
He did step up. And Skylar, to Jimmy's credit, he had a little bit of a quiet game, but then really came through in the fourth, which he seems to do every time.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take it.
Yeah, they storm back. He hit the big three. He's getting the and ones. It's really fun to see. But I have one question for you, Coach Yu. Was that a foul?
Go for it.
On Marcus Smart at the end of regulation?
I mean, 9 out of 10 times it is with Marcus Smart. I don't know. If I was coaching against him, then absolutely say it's a foul. If I was coaching, him, if I was on his team, then yeah, absolutely not. He's someone who infuriates fans and coaches, because he does flop every single time, and god damn it, should be fined every time he does do those stupid flops. But the thing that I loved, especially in the previous series against the Raptors, is that all the Boston fans hated Kyle Lowry, because he did exactly the same stuff that Marcus Smart was doing, and all the Raptors fans hated Marcus Smart because he was doing exactly the same things that Kyle Lowry was doing. And it was, which pesky little man, is gonna win this series. And, Boston, to be fair to Marcus Smart, he did sort of help them win that series. And he's, if Boston come through again, it'll be, Marcus Smart will be a big reason. But I'm not entirely convinced that they will get through. We'll see.
Yeah. So, Skylar, I'm going to throw it over to you. What do you think is going to happen with the rest of this series?
I am standing by my original prediction for this series, which is Heat come out of it in 7. I feel even better about it now. I'm not entirely convinced of the 7 games, but it's selfishly just what I'm hoping for, because I want as many of these games as possible.
That's fair. Rooting for basketball. What about you, Hugh? What do you think is going to happen in this series?
Oh, it's so tough, isn't it? I think it's probably going to be... Oh, man, it's hard. I think I'm going to go with the Heat, because they do have...
Yes, you.
They do have that offensive big presence, whereas I think, again, we're going to hear from the Boston fans. Sadly, Daniel Tice doesn't really do a lot on that end of the court. he's a great defender and I'm a big fan of him, but I think they're gonna, if all of your points are coming from attacking out on the wing and then going in, that's what tires teams out. That's why we see like the Rockets, you know, getting tired at the end of games. That's why we saw the Milwaukee Bucks get tired and get absolutely dispatched, is because if you don't have that versatility, it's going to be quite difficult. Like, even if it's not Bam Adebayo on the inside, the Heat actually have good big guards. You know, Jimmy Butler can post up anyone. And and even Goran Dragic, you know, he's smaller, but he is a big for a point guard. And against like Kemba Walker, he's overpowering him a lot of the time. So I think having the inside presence will help, because Miami Heat is so good defensively that they're going to force the Celtics into some tough 3-point shots, and then they're going to be able to protect the paint quite well. So I'm going to go Heat in six on this one.
Yes.
This is one of the most evenly matched teams and series I've seen in a while, where they are pretty similar teams. The chemistry is off the charts. They have these good wings. Both coaches are making really strategic moves back and forth. So it's been really fun. I'm not a huge fan of either of these teams, but I'm sticking with mine too. I'm going with Celtics. I think they are primed and ready to take this next step. They've played together a lot longer than the Heat. We see that chemistry has made a big difference in other series. It's going to be tough, though. I just felt like the Celtics had this game and kind of blew it, and they're going to come back with a vengeance. So yeah. I'm going with Celtics. Let's move on.
Yeah, it's tough to shoot against the Celtics at the moment.
Yeah, they've been incredible. But let's move on to our Denver versus Clippers series that was just the talk of NBA Twitter. It was one of the most explosive moments in NBA Twitter I have ever seen. So much fun to follow that last night. I'm going to start with you, Hugh, as I temper my excitement here. What were some of your reactions from this game seven?
First up, the game itself was just incredible. And it's amazing that, you know, I personally had the Clippers in the finals at the start of the year. You know, I saw too. Them going all the way. But it's amazing that we have seen it before, you know, where you put a super team together, and they really are quite a super team. They've got such huge talent and such great depth. But, you know, it sort of reminded me of like Miami Heat in that first year where, exactly. You know, they've got all the talent, they've got all the depth, but they don't have the chemistry. And there was, you know, between Dwayne Wade and LeBron James, there was confusion over who's the top dog on this team. And undoubtedly Kawhi is the top player on this team, and he's the go-to player. But I think because you do have so many people who are used to having the ball, you know, you even going down to like Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, they're used to getting the ball at certain times in the game, and it's, you know, and just being able to score because that's what they're good at. But you also have Paul George, who I think he's in his own head a little bit, in the sense that because he doesn't know if it's his turn to score or his turn to shoot, you know, that's then throwing his entire shot off, and it's throwing the entire game plan off. And I don't think Doc Rivers necessarily put Kawhi in the best positions that he's good at. You know, you want, especially in that fourth quarter, I think you went 0-5 or 0-6. And I think the majority of them, I haven't checked. Yeah, I haven't checked the sort of shooting patterns. You'll have to forgive me, but I don't think Kawhi really got into the paint or got into the mid post, which is his spot really. I think the majority of it was coming off a screen over the top or dribbling the ball and shooting it from distance, and that's not what. Yeah, I mean, he can do it, and you do want a steady diet of it to sort of keep the defenses on their toes. But I think Kawhi needs to really be down low from time to time on offense, and I just think the game plan stalled a little bit, and whether it was hesitancy because nobody knew who was going to be the guy in the clutch, or whether Doc Rivers didn't have the right game plan, I'm not really sure, but I'm not entirely surprised. I'm a little bit disappointed that they didn't sort of reach the finals at least. But I, you know, it was always going to be tough in the first year. It's always tough in the first year. I don't think they're going to be falling apart. I think they'll come back and they'll have a good couple of years together, hopefully.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, though. It's really the Clippers didn't really know what to do in those clutch moments. You know, when they're up 3-1, how do they close this out? They had never been in that situation before. They were even a little lackluster against the Mavs in those tough games. And it was kind of just, okay, is it Paul George's turn to miss a three, or is it Kawhi's turn to get to his spot? And they didn't really know where the Nuggets came out of a game 7 where they came back from 3-1. They knew exactly what they had to do, who had to do it if they were going to win. Jamal Murray has to step up if they're going to win the game. Jokic has to power the offense. That's how they beat the Jazz. And they both executed and played some of the best two-man game I've ever seen in these kind of down 3-1 in these clutch moments. And they came through. They knew who they were. They knew what they had to do. They had chemistry over years. They played together a long time. And it was so much fun to watch. Before I go on further, though, Skylar, we watched this together. You don't enjoy the Nuggets because they're not charismatic. And also because the Clippers have great walk-in fit. So you're letting the off-court stuff affect the on-court stuff, Skylar.
Always. I think that it's ridiculous to think that anyone doesn't do that.
That's very fair. But what were some of your reactions from watching this? We watched together, so I saw you in pain. Mm-hmm. What are some of your reactions after you've sat on it and gone through NBA Twitter?
I mean, first of all, just want to thank the Clippers as a Rockets fan for taking the heat off the Rockets for a little bit. Maybe everyone will just forget that the Rockets collapsed because the Clippers had such a brilliant collapse last night. Just to echo what you guys said, it's 100% a chemistry thing with this Clippers team. But I also think that there's, you know, we talk about the X factor with players, and I just don't think Paul George has it. You know, I think that there was a little bit of a mismatch in kind of expectations in this year. I'm going to read you some quotes. Lou Will last night in his post-game press conference said, we had championship expectations this year and we're disappointed to not have reached that. Paul George in his post-game press conference, we didn't have championship expectations this year. We haven't been together long enough. I mean, Paul George, like, we talk about the X factor. Like, I was watching all of Paul George's post-game press conferences after all of these games. And, like, after every loss, they'd be like, how are you guys feeling going into this next game? He'd be like, yeah, we feel good. We feel positive. We feel okay about it. Which, like, I know you want to, like, posture and make it seem like, you're not freaking out. But at the same time, like, to be like, yeah, we're coming off of these awful losses, like, we feel good, that just, like, does not make sense to me. Like, it's okay if players are out there saying, like, yeah, we're disappointed with our performance. We want to be doing better. So it's really weird to see these kind of, like, mismatch expectations from, like, two of the major, major players on this team. And, you know, I've said it once, I'll say it again. Maybe it's just not a great idea to play for your ex-girlfriend's dad who you cheated on. Maybe that doesn't work.
Maybe that affects your mental game a little. Yikes.
Oh, sorry about it.
Very good point, Skylar. We have some we have a lot of good relationship comparisons here. Yeah. I am just happy that, you know, Jokic has been an incredible player in the regular season. Jamal Murray has had, you know, was better last year. We've been kind of criticizing him as Nuggets fans this year for not stepping up. And, you know, I think Jokic was top 5 MVP candidate this year. So to see them taking this next jump in the playoffs, and I think Jokic has, I think I saw this random stat where he has the highest increase in points per game from the regular season to the playoffs of any player ever. I think he went from like 17 or 18 or 19 up to like 28, 27. In the playoffs. So he has really stepped up. Murray, after the unfortunate leaking his own sex tape incident, has really stepped up. We're on fire today, Skylar. He's really stepped up. And it's been really fun to, like, see them get the respect where Jokic was the best player in this series where there was Kawhi and Paul George. And Yanni tweeted at me this morning and said, really good to see the chunky Serb and Maple Curry back at it again. Wow. I just love this duo.
I think I've struggled on praising Murray in the past because he has had hot streaks before, but never put it together for a whole season or a full playoffs. But he, I think, to be fair, he is deserving of the praise that he's getting this year. Whether or not it's because he's trying to prove that, you know, he is a top performer, you know, because I know people sort of criticized him because of that sex tape and how he wasn't a top performer. So, you know, he's really showed up in the playoffs now. And I think with Jokic as well, Jokic is the best big man in the NBA. I'm not questioning it anymore. He's been one of the best big men in the world for quite some time. But yeah, this year he's really shown. He had like 22 rebounds last night. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
insane.
That's crazy.
And Murray had 40 points. He had more than Kawhi and Paul George combined by like 13.
That's crazy.
I do want to talk about Kawhi for a minute.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, so I feel like anywhere you plug in Kawhi, like there's a good chance they have a championship run. Not a championship run, but it's going to be a very good team and a contending team anywhere you put Kawhi. But this just proves that, like, it took so much more around Kawhi at the Raptors to win that championship. Like, they had a cohesive unit around him. They were well coached. They had like a game plan that made sense. And so just plugging Kawhi into any old team, it's not going to get you to a championship the way that it did in Toronto. Like, Toronto is not the standard, is what I want people to understand. But also, like, I feel like there's something to be said about... Go ahead.
No, sorry, go on. I interrupted you.
I feel like there's something to be said about how the Raptors were thought about with Kawhi and how the Clippers were thought about with Kawhi. Like, the Raptors, they were playing as underdogs all year. And I felt like the Clippers, because they had such big expectations coming into this team and people were hyping them up so much, it looked like they were coasting through a lot of the year and just kind of putting together wins how they could. But they weren't really in it. And when you're doing that, it's not like you can just like switch it on whenever you need to. Like, if you're coasting, it's, you have to like get your head into the game. They weren't able to just turn it on when they needed to.
I think that's the difference between chemistry that we were talking about earlier. So you have Toronto Raptors who, by and large, last year, they were the same team that they had been for the previous 5 years that kept on falling short. You know, they did need someone to take them over the hump, but even a new head coach was their old assistant head coach, you know, so he's been in the locker room. He's been around for quite some time. And actually, you know, we shout out to Nick Nurse. You know, I try to do it on every podcast I can, you know, for the only coach in the BBL who has then gone on to win a championship in the NBA as well. So they had Nick Nurse come in, but he was already there. They basically had the whole team there that had been built for many years previous. The only additions they made was really Mark Gasol and Danny Green and Kawhi. Now, Danny Green didn't do very well last year. He was okay. He did his job, but that's about the most basic request you can have for him for last year. Mark Gasol was excellent because he is a proven winner. He's a FIBA World Cup champion. You know, he knows how to lead a team, even though they fell short so many times in Memphis. And then you had Kawhi, who has been built as a winner. You know, he was taken from the ultimate winning franchise, and he was a former finals MVP for that ultimate winning franchise. And he just took the most recent information of winning on this ultimate winning franchise and said, oh, so I just put it here in this team. And I think the mistake that they made was that, yeah, you can't just do that on any old team. You know, you could do it on the Raptors because they've been built over many years, but you can't just build it from nothing. But hopefully he realizes that, and hopefully, you know, they give it a good shot next year. Maybe some light tweaks, but I think they've got a good championship contending team for a couple of years.
Yeah. And it's just, it's sad to see. We love the Raptors. We're known to love the Raptors. I think they would have won it this year if Kawhi would have stayed. And it's, that must be a tough pill to swallow for Raptors fans. And even for Kawhi, where you're out in the, you know, in the semifinals when he's looking at the Raptors and going, man, I could have made it to the finals. We could have won this entire thing again.
Yeah. Especially because the Raptors went out in the same round as the Clippers, you know, they didn't go any further than his previous team. So yeah.
Tough loss there. Let's go into Western Conference predictions. We've got the matchup everyone's been looking forward to this entire season, Denver versus LA. Adam Silver must just be like, God damn it. We almost had it. I don't think it's as bad because it's not going to be Staples Center. It's in the bubble, so we don't really get that. But Skyler, who do you think is going to win this series? What's going to happen? LeBron versus Jokic, AD versus Jokic. What's going to happen here?
You know, Brian, I'm sorry. I think the Lakers are going to dominate the Nuggets.
How could you doubt us after that last series?
I honestly don't know, because I don't know how I'm still doubting Denver. Like, they keep proving me wrong, and they keep going down 3-1 and me being like, all right, there it is. Like, I was right. And then they just keep coming back. So, you know, maybe, Brian, maybe this is me doing you a favor. If I just keep hating, they'll keep winning. So you're welcome. I'm going to take the Lakers in 6.
All right. Fair enough. Hugh, what do you think?
Nah, she's crazy. I think we're going to see... I'm fully on board with the Nuggets. Like, I think... Going back to what you were saying earlier, Sky, I'm gonna push back a little bit on them being, like, boring. Is that what you said on the... They're boring on the court?
I did say boring. Not charismatic. Yeah, it's like...
Not charismatic. I just don't see that, because you have a guy who just looks to throw the ball down the court every time he catches it off a rebound. But when they're in the half court, like, they're just it doesn't really matter who has it. Yeah, they have their two-man game between Murray and Jokic, but actually, they're just sort of like, it didn't work. Let's just throw it over there. And how about you try and create something cool? And it's always just like, I don't know what's going to go on, but I'm pretty sure something cool is going to come out of it at the end. You know, it doesn't look like they have a plan, and yet they have a plan. And yeah, shout out Mike Malone. He's done such a fantastic job. Sort of, he's clearly built in good solid base of understanding of what he wants out of that team, because they are able to freelance when things don't go their way. And I think that, you know, that's like Jason Kidd, that's like Steve Nash, you know, where you can just, okay, shit's hitting the fan, let's just make it work. And I don't know what's to not love about that. The Lakers Nuggets series, I think it is going to be an interesting transition, because we've seen the Lakers not really compete with the big guy on the court for, you know, a little while now. And I think going up against Jokic, they're going to have to bring out JaVale McGee or Dwight Howard. And you might even see, you know, Anthony Davis and even LeBron James, you know, that might have a couple of possessions against trying to guard against the big guy. So it's going to challenge the Lakers, you know, defensive coaching a little bit. And I think it is going to be an interesting series, but I don't know. I think I've said this for a little while. I think, you know, you've got the 1-2 punch in LeBron and AD, but you can't really just win a championship with just a 1-2 punch these days. I think the creativity that the Nuggets have with Jamal and Nikola Jokic, but also you have a couple of X factors, and, you know, Porter Jr. being one of them. And I think they have a few more pieces who are at a level where they might not be yet, but they are about to be sort of all-star level type of players. It reminds me of like the 2015 Golden State Warriors, where you had, you know, one or two stars, and you had a couple of others who were going to be, you know, on that level in a couple of years' time. And I think, yeah, and you also have the chemistry. So I think I think the Nuggets do have a few more things going for them at the moment.
Do you mean to say that Alex Caruso isn't an X factor, Hugh?
He has been.
Alex Caruso, I'm sure his mother loves him, but I don't think he's really got that elite talent. Don't get me wrong, I actually think Alex Caruso is actually, you know, despite all the unnecessary hype he gets, I think he is worthy of some of it. He's an incredible player, and I think in some ways he's underrated because people just look at his balding spot and his awesome dunks. They don't realize the defensive effort he puts in, and that he's actually just a great swingman who can do a little bit of everything, not to an elite standard, but he can do a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I like Caruso. I think he's a great player, but he's not really on like that Jamal Murray stage, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've said this from the start, where the Nuggets still seem like they're a couple years away. Where they're still rebuilding, you know, they're building up their core. MPJ is improving and still a rookie. But I don't know how they're doing this right now. I don't know how they pulled off the win over the Clippers. So I don't want to doubt them, but I can't bet against the King. I'm also going Lakers. I think it'll go six. I also did this last time with the Clippers, so it seems to work for me. so I'm going with Lakers. It seems like LeBron can just decide these series by himself still at 35. So I'm going Lakers.
That will be the difference. Yeah, that'll be the difference is if LeBron James just says, I'm winning this one.
Yep. I don't think the Nuggets have a person that can do that yet. But let's move on to the electric WNBA games. Let's start with the one that was first on the roster, the Suns versus the Sky. The Sun versus the Sky, Connecticut Sun versus the Chicago Sky. We had Meredith Minkow on from Bleacher Report last week. The Sky, again, Hugh, agreed. Such a fun team to watch. Mm-hmm. It's been really fun. Unfortunately, they didn't pull through here, so we don't get any more Sky. But what were your reactions to this one, Skylar, kind of seeing this one go through?
I mean, this was truly just the Alyssa Thomas game, I think. She had 26 Amazing. Points, 13 rebounds, 8 assists. Huge game from her. Love to see her thrive like this. Just have to get it in there. I'm really sad to see the Sky go, but I also was not quite ready to give up Kurt Miller and the Wubble. So, you know.
I know.
Happy to have the Sun going through. But, you know, I think you can see, like, they talked to Alyssa Thomas after the game, and she was talking about, like, she's so fueled this year by how close they were to winning the championship last year. You know, they lost in 5 games to Washington, and you can really see that fight in this team.
Yeah, what about you, Hugh?
I sort of feel bad for Alyssa Thomas. Yeah, I feel bad for Alyssa Thomas because, you know, she's been with that core for a little while now. And, you know, even through the Shinee Ogumike period where, you know, it's sort of, there was some inside squabbles, I think. I don't know the full story. I'm not going to, you know, try and gossip more than that, but I think there were some issues within the locker room there. But they sort of rebuilt that in the image of Jonquil Jones, but still you had this tough, physical leader in Alyssa Thomas, and you had all, you know, the supreme swag of Courtney Williams, and you just thought, yes, this is the team that I can follow for the next 3 years because they are going to be so cool. And then all of a sudden, it just all crumbles. Jonquil can't join because she's concerned about, you know, COVID-19, which is cool. But then you have Courtney Williams going in the off season, and all of a sudden, everything just seems to be going wrong. But they managed to land Dawana Bonner, and that is working out. I don't think any team could land Dawana Bonner and say, hey, I'm a bit concerned about this. and I'm super pleased for her that she's still able to be this tough, amazing leader that she is and push her team to the next level. I did sort of suspect that they might win this game because the Sky, they've always struggled with big physical teams, and there is no one bigger or more physical than Alyssa Thomas.
Yeah,
she looked like an athlete more than anyone else I've seen on that court, where she's just taking it coast to coast, laying it up. She was amazing to watch. And Bonner, you're right. Like, I just compared this to Kawhi. Kawhi was 0 for 0 from the free throw line in game 7. Didn't shoot a free throw. Bonner was 13 for 13. So that's a huge difference where you're attacking, you're getting into the paint, you're wanting to take that win instead of you, like you said, just kind of settling for the outside shots, not really getting into the paint. So this was fun to watch. Again, though, this was a crazy roller coaster game where it was pretty even at half. And then the Sun in the third quarter scored 27 to Chicago's 11 and just took this game and held on to the end. So this one was a lot of fun. I just want to note, though, let me ask you here. What do you think about this single elimination format? Because this was a really fun game to watch. The next one is really fun. And we only get one. And now the Sky have to go home.
I mean, I love it because it is, you know, anything can happen. But at the same time, I mean, you might end up setting me off on a complete different tangent here now. But I think the WNBA just needs to rethink its season entirely. You know, I think there were so many concerns coming into this year that the WNBA was going to be competing against NBA playoff action and who's going to watch the WNBA, but actually people have. And if anything, they've watched it more because you're able to promote them. You're able to cross promote them. You're able to have them on at different times. You know, that there's going to be a game every day. In the WNBA, and there's always something to watch. That's been so exciting, and the storylines have really held up. And actually, I think they just need to stop going with these silly 34 game seasons now in the summer. To try and work it around the NBA schedule, and just say, no, we're good enough. We've got a good enough following. Let's go head to head. Let's turn it into a 46 game season, and have a little tournament hanging off the back of it, and then also have an all-star game every year, and then also have the playoffs, and make it, you know, three game series in the first round if you want, and then five games in the second round if you want. I think they need to just I realize they've just worked out a CBA, so this isn't going to be changing anytime soon, but they've proven that it might be the least watched sport in America in terms of professional sports compared to NFL, NBA, NHL, even baseball. But it does have a dedicated following, and all they want is more. And if you can double the amount of games the players are going to play, then hopefully you can double the amount of salary you can pay them, and then they won't need to travel abroad to go and earn those salaries. Now, for me, I'm quite happy. I'm a European basketball fan, so I get to watch them in Europe anyway. It makes no difference. Yeah. But I think if you really want to say the WNBA is the best women's basketball league in the world, which, to be honest, I don't think you can say that at the moment, because the same talent over there then just goes over to Europe. I think if you want to say it's the best women's basketball league in the world, then you need to make more games. You need to have it going up against other sports between, say, October and March. Sorry, that completely went off on a rant. And all you asked was, do I like single game eliminations? Which I do.
Yeah, I agree. It's been really fun to watch this at the same time as the NBA. The cross promotions have been great with the WNBA hoodies, you know, a lot of the NBA players supporting with the, you know, the DT GOAT shirt that Devin Booker wore.
That's one that I need.
I know you've been active on Twitter of wanting to get those WNBA merch over in the UK. But yeah, it's been really fun to watch these at the same time, and I agree. Skylar, what do you think of these single elimination?
I mean, single elimination games are always going to be like super fun, but it's, you know, single elimination games are never, I mean, I guess never, not never, but it's not always going to have the team advancing that is the better team necessarily. I think, you know, the Sun and the Sky, I think the right team came out of the Mystics Mercury team. I think the Sun and the Sky, they were so, they were both so good this year, but yeah, I mean, they're always going to be so much fun. And selfishly, we didn't get March Madness this year, so we haven't really seen very many single elimination games. So I like it.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, goodbye, Chicago Sky. It's been incredible. Bye, Vander Sloot, and everything you're bringing. First WNBA player ever to average 10 assists in a season. So really fun to watch. But now the Connecticut Sun move on to play the Sparks on Thursday night. So looking forward to seeing that. Let's get to the Mystics Mercury game, which, wow, this was one of the best games I've seen in basketball, period. Skylar, do you want to start off with some of your reactions to seeing this game?
I feel like I say this all the time, but I just feel bad for anyone who has to go against Diana Taurasi at all times. Like when her and Skylar Diggins kind of started that 17-0 run to come back last night, like you could just, wow. From the time that Diana Taurasi hit those two back-to-back threes, you could just feel it. I mean, you could just feel that they were going to take over and they were going to win this game.
Yeah, I wrote a story for I wrote a story for Sky saying how you cannot count Diana Taurasi out. You know, don't ever count her out because she is the ultimate. She's going back to what we were talking about earlier with LeBron. You know, you can never bet against him. You can never bet against Taurasi. She doing this at 38, which is she's coming off the back of a really tough back injury last year. I think because she spent too much time carrying her team for so many years, you know, your back is bound to hurt a little bit after that. She and Skylar Diggins Smith, they struggled in that first half. I think they only had like two field goals made between them, but you knew that that wasn't going to be the case in the second half. And I think, I got into this debate with someone, I can't quite remember who it was in the preseason, how you know, trading Skylar, I mean, they didn't trade, but they got Skylar Diggins-Smith in and then they lost to Juana Bana. And, I think you could argue that, yeah, the talent level, the talent swap there, it's not as high. But Skylar Diggins-Smith offers so much more, I think, and it changes the setup. And ever since Brittany Griner has gone down, the Mercury, they're playing small ball essentially. You know, they've reworked the offense a little bit, where you've got Taurasi on defense. She's sort of playing the power forward position at times. And yeah, that's easier for her because she doesn't have to chase these little guards around. And she's such a smart player that she can play any position anyway. And it means that the floor is more open and they've added a few little pieces here and there. I mean, we've got we mentioned it earlier, but Shea Petty was such a great pickup, even though she barely made the team for Washington Mystics before they cut her. You know, it's such an incredible story. And yeah, I'm really pleased that we get at least one more playoff run of Diana Taurasi. Who knows how many years this is going to last.
Yeah, agreed. I've loved the fight of these two teams because, like you said, Griner went down. The Mystics, the defending champion, stepped up. Mieseman was incredible. Mitchell was just raining fire down from threes, which was really fun to see. Oh, but yeah. DT and Skylar, that was insane. Just in people's faces, just spotting up. Oh, that was amazing to see. But yeah, DT and Skylar Diggins-Smith just – they would not lose this game. And that's what people were talking about before. DT does not lose this, one of the most competitive athletes ever. And they just took it. I think the fourth quarter, 26-14, they just rolled and they were not going to lose this game. And then, yeah, the Shea Petty story. Skylar, I'm going to tee this one up for you. Incredible, not only incredible play and shot, but an incredible story behind it. And Skylar, do you want to kind of go through this a little bit?
Yeah, so Shea Petty had, you know, one of the best stories in the WNBA, like, before she even hit this shot. So I'm just so happy for her for this to kind of be the cherry on the top. But let's run through it. This is credited, thanks to Lindsay Gibbs on Twitter for putting this together. She's a great WNBA reporter, so follow her at Lynn Sports. Yeah. She put together a full timeline on Shea Petty to kind of tell this story. So she was drafted 23rd overall in 2012, cut from the Sky camp in 2012. In 13, she was invited to the Mystics training camp, cut before the season. In 2019, she was invited back to the Mystics camp, again, cut before the season. They had two players go for the Eurobasket in 2019. So then she was signed as a replacement player. So she ended up making her WNBA debut at age 30. So she was a 30-year-old rookie. She played for a month, but it was mostly like just when they were up by, you know, 20 or down by 20. It was pretty much just garbage minutes. And so then when their players came back from Eurobasket, she was cut again. But then they ended up keeping her on as an assistant coach. So she has actually won a WNBA championship, but it was as a coach. And so this year before the wobble, the Mystics called again and asked her if she wanted to join them for the summer. And she thought that they were saying as a coach again, but they actually meant as a wobble player. She ended up getting cut by the Mystics again. I think that there was, they were trying to like just move some players around or something. They were saying like, we're going to waive you and then we're going to re-sign you. Like, I don't know, some technicality that I'm sure Hugh understands better than I do. But in that time that she was cut, she ended up going and signing with the Mercury. And so now here she is hitting the game winner after being cut like so many different times. She's finally getting her shot. What an incredible story.
Yeah, really amazing.
Amazing.
And also just a testament to the WNBA where you see the Jason Tatum final shot at the end of regulation where it's just ISO 35-footer. And it seems like the WNBA actually always plays as a team here, has a drawn-up play, gets it in. They're unselfish. I think Skylar Diggins kicks it out to Shea. So that trust of, you know, that whole story behind her, and she's the one that she kicked it out to, pump fakes, hits it as time expires. They win the game. It's just, it was an incredible thing to see.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful because she was so tight with the Mystics players. Of course, you know, all the Mercury players went up and hugged her, but then you had the Mystics players hugging her as well because they were just so happy for someone who was on their team, you know, and someone who was in their coaching staff the previous year. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so much fun to see. And Phoenix will play Minnesota also on Thursday. So we get another really, really fun second round where we get to see the Lynx and the Sparks go against these teams who just came out of single elimination. So it'll be a fun few days of basketball through the end of week here.
Definitely.
Hugh, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it, Skylar. It's been a pleasure as always. But Hugh, we appreciate it. If you don't follow Coach Hugh on Twitter and Instagram, go. He produces amazing content. Thank you so much, Hugh.
Thanks, Hugh.
Peace.